Good rainy afternoon. Welcome to the Second Court of Appeals. Your panel this afternoon is to my right, Justice Sue Walker, to my left, Justice Bill Meyer. I'm Leanne Dauphineau. We have two cases set for oral submission at 1:30, and then we have another at 3 o'clock, and anything else we have is submitted on the briefs. So understand one side is ready and the other side has chosen not to argue, so we'll get started. Would you call a case?
Please the court. As you know, my name is Mark Daniel. I represent Dennis Taylor. He's the appellee. I intend to be brief, and I do not say this to be facetious, but I'm a little puzzled why this appeal was brought by the state, but it was. But I was puzzled because the large body of law that has been built up against their position, but there still remains a very narrow issue. I know you had a 40-plus page brief you had to wade through from their standpoint, but the issue is this court giving deference to the trial court and upholding its decision if it's correct on any factual basis in the record or any legal basis that would appear, and those are only disturbed if there's some abuse of discretion. If they're so far off the reservation, and this ruling by Judge Stearns was not only in bounds, it was in the middle of the playing field. It's interesting to note the suppression hearing was held October 14, 2013. I know the court can see that from the record. It was 1 year and 14 days later that Judge Stearns issued his ruling granting the motion to suppress. I don't profess to be able to tap into his thought process, but I think what he was doing was carefully waiting to see about the body of law that would evolve from McNeely. And he waited for all that to come in place before he made a ruling consistent with that, and evolve it did. And frankly, I don't mean to stand here and make the same argument to you that I did the trial court, but it's important because here we are 25 months removed from McNeely. It was April of 2013, and Justice Sotomayor, who was somewhat new to the court, had authored the McNeely opinion. And she did so in very simple, straightforward language, and I don't stand here to criticize the Supreme Court. In so many opinions, you read back page after page trying to decide what they're trying to say and what they mean. Is there some hidden meaning? She was very simple. She's very straightforward. She said that a blood draw from an EWI suspect invokes a Fourth Amendment search. And when it is reasonable to obtain a search warrant, that's what must be done. That's what McNeely says. It says it very straightforward and very simply. Texas courts have fallen in lockstep with that. And I don't need to recite all the opinions to this court. I know that several of y'all have heard these before. They're in my brief, page 14 and 15. You got Avilis, Cole, Dowds, Forsyth, Gore, Holiday, misspelled obviously, Leal, Lloyd. But more importantly, this court, and I butcher this every time I say it, Chidiowski, that's my fault.
We don't do any better.
Yes, ma'am.
We don't have a clue.
Boyer, which was also a case I handled at the trial court level, and then Burks, and y'all have ruled consistently throughout this year of 2015 as the McNeely jurisprudence has evolved. And we know from 2014 in Villarreal, and maybe this court was awaiting that, I don't know. But we know what the Court of Criminal Appeals said also, that it invokes the Fourth Amendment. We know Villarreal is sitting there waiting for rehearing. I know as I read the state's brief, they put some credence in the rehearing, and I just don't know that's a solid basis for jurisprudence to say there's some rehearing awaiting, and therefore it doesn't have authority. The state made several different arguments. They told you that we have implied consent, and Stewart from the Beaumont Court of Appeals told us that just because it happened before McNeely doesn't negate the principle. But more importantly, when you have consent, you have to be able to revoke that consent in some manner. 724.012B in no way allows a DWI defendant to revoke a consent. So there's no consent at all. And 724.013 says if the person refuses on the implied consent statute, that no sample can be taken. So it goes against that. We saw where there's some special needs exception that should apply. We saw that some erroneous consideration, some less intrusive means should apply. None of those have been upheld by our appellate courts here in Texas, or really throughout the nation as I can see. So I'm simply asking the court to give deference to what it said in Boyer and Burks and Chidiowski, and affirm the trial court's ruling, and that's what we're asking. I'll be happy to entertain any questions.
Well, I have a question that's totally off point. I'm just curious to know what you think. Do you remember several years ago in Forest, in another one of the little towns in Tarrant County, they had a pad of warrants that were already signed, and when the officers wanted a warrant, they just brought in an affidavit and tore off the warrant and took it with them? Do you remember that?
I remember hearing that story. Yes, ma'am.
Well, with the good faith exception in the Code of Criminal Procedure that says if you got any kind of warrant, you can't, the evidence isn't subject to suppression. If where they take the DWIs, they had a pad of warrants already signed, and all they did was just leave a form affidavit, tear off the warrant, and do the blood draw, would you be able to challenge that or not?
Yes, ma'am. Absolutely.
How?
Well, for two reasons. If you look at Franks versus Delaware, it allows you to go behind the warrant.
Well, now, Franks, that's you got to have proof of funny stuff, you know, dishonesty of some sort. And you think it's subject to a Franks hearing?
Yes, ma'am, because you then go behind the warrant, not just on the face of the warrant, because that, as you look at what you're describing, and the judge was W.W. Matthews, by the way, not Byron Matthews, W.W. Matthews.
W.W.
And I think it was Justice of the Peace, if I recall correctly. Mm-hmm. I may be wrong.
Mm-hmm. He was a J.P.
But that warrant on his face would appear to be valid, and it certainly has an affidavit attached to it and a signature on it. And I guess the officers filled in the remainder of the boilerplate information on the front page of the warrant, or whatever it was. And you look at that, how else under search warrant law in Texas and the Fourth Amendment, Frank's is the only vehicle I know of to go behind and show whether information on the face of the warrant is false, or certainly the affidavit. And I know that Frank's is primarily confined to false statements or reckless disregard for the truth.
But the good faith exception in the Code of Criminal Procedure says the officer can rely in good faith
on a warrant that wasn't issued by a judge.
Any warrant issued by a magistrate. So what would you have to do? Argue it wasn't a neutral magistrate?
You simply produce evidence, whether it's with the officer or not. But I've got to provide the vehicle through my motion to suppress, saying there's something irregular about this process once I discover that information. And my motion would simply say this wasn't even reviewed by a magistrate, much less issued by a magistrate, because frankly, the signature was done before the events ever occurred that would have, quote unquote, given rise to probable cause if it did. So Franks is the one vehicle I know that allows me to go behind the warrant process and show the trial court that there's something nefarious about what's been represented or the issuance of the warrant. And you know, and I know that to do that, we have to be very specific, not absolutely specific, but we have to raise factual issues in our motion that the court can see. Some boilerplate motion of saying I simply want to go exploring is insufficient. So that's the only vehicle I would know to go explore that. And you would not have a good faith exception there because it wasn't issued by an impartial magistrate. It was rubber stamped many weeks before.
I was just curious what you would have to say. Anybody else have any questions about anything? Cabbages? Kings?
Thank you all very much. I appreciate your time.
Thank you. Well, you have anything else you want to say?
Daniel, would you like to present any kind of argument on behalf of the state?
A little bit of time. This is kind of interesting, Your Honors. On a serious note, and I don't profess to be the world's renowned expert on McNeely issues, but when it was issued, I probably did what a lot of y'all did. I read it three or four times, trying to really figure out where you got to go. And the language in there about where it's reasonable to obtain, I guess I developed a theory coming out of my narrow brain that said, you know, that's almost putting the burden on us to show how easy it was. And in this hearing, I mean, the municipal judge, and y'all might be aware, Colleyville and Keller had a merger of their court and judicial systems. I had Judge Newman there. I had the chief of police there. I brought the policies. I made them bring their boilerplate forms they use. I brought the traffic sergeants to show how quickly they could assemble and prepare the warrant. And Judge Newman, how far are you from the police department? I'm 3-minute drive away. Are you available 24/7? Yes, I am. If you're gone, where is somebody else? Oh, yeah, we have substitute magistrates available. And so, you know, I know y'all have dealt with these issues time and time again. Some of them may be developed that to that length. Some may not. But the prosecution's not going to show how easy it was. And I think that's kind of what Justice Sotomayor was looking at. She said, if it's readily, and she used the word readily available. And since that is subject to interpretation, I think we're able to show how absolutely simple it would have been to do it. I think we even showed that Officer Hicks, the arresting officer, had been to Judge Newman's house many times in the evening hours before he could get there without the benefit of MapQuest or otherwise. He knew exactly where it was, and there was always a cup of coffee waiting for him to sign the warrant. So it was an easy process, and it was very efficient. The entire system was set up. They had policies and procedures in place. And so I think that's a burden we kind of began to bear with this, and I think we proved it overwhelmingly, at least to Judge Stearns. So if you have any other questions, I'll be happy to address them.
Questions?
Thank you for the court's time.
Well, thank you. I'm sorry you had to come through the rain for such a short hearing. You probably should mark this down on your calendar as one of the shortest ones. But we do appreciate your argument and appreciate your answering my question. Your case is submitted.